Welcome now to the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland. Once again, happy to be in our Buck studio because that means live music. And we have a wonderful young pianist to perform music by Ravel and Liszt during this hour. She's Pallavi Mahidra. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm used to seeing biographies of performers that have big paragraphs of the ensembles they've played with and the places they played. But in your case, it's so cosmopolitan. I mean, I can't can't even tell where you came from, and you're living in Chicago now, is that right?
No, actually.
I told you.
I was born and raised in the States. I grew up mostly in Chicago and the outside of the D.C. area, and I attended the Curtis Institute of Music for my college for my bachelor's degree. But I moved to Europe in 2010. I was living in Madrid for 4 years, and then I moved to Berlin in 2014. So I currently live in Berlin, Germany.
Oh, you do? See, I didn't even pick that up in the material that I was given.
There'll be a quiz on that later.
Yeah, that's right. Make a note at 12:30. That's going to be on there. So what have you gained from each of those residences, in those different countries?
Well, it was actually something that I'd wanted to do for a while. I'd wanted to study in Europe, where classical music was born, Western classical music was born, and it was something that I felt was the right time to do after I finished my bachelor's studies. And I moved there planning to stay there for 2 years and come back, and I just never left.
So you liked it?
I love it.
And in Berlin?
I love it in Europe in general. Mm-hmm. And Berlin is an amazing city, especially musically, to be in. There's so many opportunities. You have one of the greatest orchestras in the world, the Berlin Philharmonic, right there. And so it's really the place to be right now. I would say if New York is to the U.S., Berlin is to the world for music.
You know, what I hear occasionally from performers and composers who have spent a lot of time working with European composers and ensembles, and they describe some pretty strange music that's being made over there in terms of one of them said something to the effect of, oh, so in America you're still using notes? So that can give you kind of a strange picture of the state of contemporary music in Europe. But what is it actually like?
I will say that whatever I am describing was not directly related with the contemporary music scene. I don't know. I think each country, each region has its own sort of idea about contemporary music. And, you know, I've played a little bit of contemporary music in Berlin. A fellow colleague of mine in Berlin asked me and a cellist friend of mine to play one of his works. And it was very interesting. It was not at all without notes.
Probably had lots of them, in fact. So if you were to go to see the Berlin Philharmonic play, what would likely be on a program?
They actually do very interesting programs a lot of the time to try and widen the range of what's heard. So, for example, I see quite often that they will put one very well-known composer or one very well-known work on a program, but pair it with pieces that are either seldomly played or heard, or by composers that are seldomly played or heard. So it's a nice way to sort of attract audiences and still keep us fresh.
Sure, yeah, that's a pretty common strategy in this country too.
Yeah, I guess I think it's pretty common in
I kind of think
times.
Of it as like a sandwich.
You know, you get your, a little bit.
You get your Mozart on the one side, and you get your Beethoven on the other, and in the middle, it's going to be somebody you never heard of, and it might be wonderful stuff. Well, everybody's heard, I think, of the two composers you've chosen to represent today. And the first 60% or so is going to be clearly impressionistic. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it, how impressionism came as a kind of a pan-artistic phenomenon. I mean, you know, if you say, just use that word impressionist, you might think of say, you know, Monet or one of those turn of the 20th century painters. But of course, the composers were doing, in France in particular, much the same thing.
Of course. Well, I wanted to play a little bit of this music today because They're very, very descriptive works. Each movement from the suite that I will play, Mihwa or Mirrors, has its own sort of style, and I guess I can say theme. Each movement is titled, and the ones I will play today are the second, third, and fourth from the suite of five. And I will begin with the first one, the second one in the set. And the first one I will play is Oiseaux Tristes, which in English means sad birds. And this movement retains a sort of dark heaviness throughout the piece, over which you can hear the sad calling of the bird. And it sounds like it's coming from a distance, perhaps deep within a forest or something. So it's a very somber movement, and very, very atmospheric.
Ravel liked that effect, didn't he? The distant effect.
Absolutely.
He uses it many impressionistic and impressive ways. So, Oiseaux Tristes?
Yes.
Sad birds.
Thank you.
L'Oiseau Triste, the second of the Miroir, Musical Mirrors by Maurice Ravel. And right away, that title, Miroir, that's something that a French Impressionist composer would gravitate toward, wouldn't it be water and mirrors and the play of light and the angles of the sun during one part of the day or the other. They really got into that. I'm kind of wondering if I remember right. Oh, by the way, our pianist today for the midday, in case you've just joined us, Pallavi Mahindra. And the French Impressionist composers, I mean, Ravel, if I remember right, is just about 10 years younger than Debussy, who we think of as kind of the real founder of all this. But was Ravel that influenced by Debussy, or was there some kind of common thing in the air? Do you have any idea where it all came from?
I think they truthfully have quite different styles. And if you know, sometimes it happens that you think of French music and, you know, you think of one type of sonority, but Debussy had a very distinctive voice. Ravel has a very distinctive voice, and actually, you know, you were talking about French impressionistic composers gravitating to, you know, water and all this stuff. And actually, there's a really interesting quote from Ravel, actually from his autobiographical sketch. And I hope I'm going to quote this right. I'm doing it from memory. He wrote, "The word mirror should not lead one to assume that I want to affirm a subjectivist theory of art. A sentence from Julius Caesar by Shakespeare helped me to understand formulate completely opposite opinion. The eye sees not by itself, but rather by reflection, by some other thing." So I thought that was a really, really interesting way to approach music, this type of music in general. And it's so reflective, actually, if I may use the word, of his work.
And we have then, as I've mentioned, water.
Yep.
And of course, Debussy, as well as Ravel, had this way, and the painters of the time had this way of conveying something that could be very difficult when you think of it. It tends to be transparent, you know, and how do you convey something that's transparent, and yet all of the movement of it and the shifting of the light through the water, somehow they accomplished with a piano.
Incredibly so. And actually, the next work that I'll play is Une Barque sur l'Océan, which is a boat on the ocean. And this is actually the only movement of this entire suite that is based on water. So it's a very special movement. Ravel writes in the title of the movement, with supple rhythm and enveloped with pedal. So it's really meant to be completely about the effect. You know, hearing and imagining a boat on the ocean, the water crashing up against the rocks. You can hear it in his music, and it's very, very, very effectful.
Evocative. Yeah, right.
If I may.
Yeah. So, Une Barque sur l'Océan, also from Miroir by Ravel.
Thank you.
Jean Bach, Sur l'Océan, Boat on the Ocean from Miroir by Ravel, our pianist, live in our Buck studio for this edition of The Midday, Pallavi Mohidre. And we'll be hearing more from her in the balance of the hour, too. The mark of an artist, I would say, is, in pianistic terms, that the music coming out seems spontaneous, not studied, and that certainly is the case there. It really seemed to flow.
Thank you.
It occurred to me as you were playing that this kind of music really had to wait for a certain kind of piano, didn't it? you couldn't play this on an 1850 piano or probably even an 1860 piano.
Probably not. But, you know, Ravel was, in my opinion, one of the greatest composers for the piano. I mean, his pianistic works are extremely well written in terms of the effect that they can have. Just really in incredible colors and incredible artistic effects. Really, for me, he's one of the greatest composers for the piano.
Lest we forget, you're performing in Milwaukee pretty soon, are you?
Yes, tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow, okay. And where will that be and what will the program consist of?
That will be at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music.
Mm-hmm. In Milwaukee.
And I will start with the Brahms transcription of Bach's Chaconne from the second violin partita, and it's for left hand alone. So that's a big workout.
Yes, it would be. Right. What is your right hand going to be doing all that time?
Hanging out.
Lending moral support.
And I will follow that with the entire Ravel Miroir suite. And after intermission, I will play a selection of works by Luciano Berio, Italian contemporary composer. And I will finish with the set of the six Paganini etudes by Liszt.
So that I was going to say that's a handful, but that's actually, after the Brahms, two hands full. And now back to our guest artist for the midday today. And the works of, well, one more work by Ravel, and also from Miroir. And this is, I think, probably the most famous of the pieces. Actually, one of the most famous of all of Ravel's pieces.
I would say so. This one is Alborada del Gracioso. And Ravel was actually part Basque. His mother was Basque and was raised in Madrid. And so he had a lot of Spanish influence in his life and in his music. And so this work, this is extremely fun to play. And
we'll get to that in a minute.
He takes basically the feel of Andalusian flair and combines it with the sounds of the Spanish guitar, castanets, and exciting rhythmical patterns, and it's a really fun work. The middle section is actually based on the most serious form of flamenco, which is called in Spanish cante hondo, which means deep song. And you can imagine in this middle section a flamenco singer. It's very, very expressive.
And so what about this title? It's a Spanish title for
a
French
piece. Oh, sorry, I forgot to translate that. Yeah. Morning Song of the Jester.
Alvarado del Gracioso, Morning Song of the Jester from Miroir by Ravel, and our pianist, Pallavé Mujidra, who did a nimble job keeping up with that one. A credit to the piece and the pianist and the piano, for that matter. You said that was a particularly fun piece to play, and why? I mean, it looked like quite the workout.
I mean, having lived in Madrid for 4 years, I have grown very, very, very fond of Spain, Spanish culture, Spanish music. And so for me, it's a particular pleasure because I feel like I'm somewhere in Sevilla, Granada, somewhere in the south. It really takes me somewhere else.
With all of these other elses where you have resided, how many languages do you speak?
English is the only one I speak kind of well.
Yes, that's quite good.
No, I speak a bit of Spanish, a very abysmal version of German, a bit of Italian. I understand French. I understand Hindi. So,
well, it sounds like you could get around quite a bit with that combination. And now back to our pianist today, Pallavé Mujidra, and we're going from Ravel now to the pianist who was probably the greatest showman in the world, except that he learned how to do it from a violinist.
That is correct. Franz Liszt was a fantastic musician, pianist, composer, and he actually sort of changed the way piano was viewed. Up until that point, no one had ever really done a solo recital, and he was the first one to actually do that, and he initially called these performances soliloquies, and they eventually became solo recital, and people used to make fun of him. How can you recite on the piano alone? But he really changed the way piano was viewed, and he also is the one who turned the piano at a right angle so that the audience could see his profile.
Which apparently drove the ladies crazy.
Absolutely. But he was strongly influenced by his great friend and colleague, Niccolò Paganini, who was the famed Italian virtuoso. He was a violinist, guitarist, composer, and he wrote, among many things, a set of 24 caprices for the violin, which are all fiendishly difficult. And Liszt wanted to basically be the Paganini of the piano world, and he wrote a set of 6 grand etudes after Paganini, and 5 out of 6 of these are based on the caprices. I will start today with the 2nd etude, which is based on the 17th caprice, and I will follow it up with the 3rd, which is probably the most famous one of the set, titled La Campanella, this means the little bells, and this or the little bell, and this is actually based on the last movement of Paganini's 2nd violin concerto.
Thank you.
Alema Hidra. I wonder to hear and wonder to watch, too.
Thank you.
Talk about showmanship, but I mean not without laying on anything extra, just the motion of your hands coming to terms with Paganini and Liszt at the same time. Quite spectacular.
Thank you.
Now, you have an affiliation with the piano arts competition, right? You were a previous winner.
Yes, I was. I did the competition, I think it was 10 years ago.
Oh, that long ago?
Yeah, and I've had a very wonderful, long-standing relationship with Sue in piano arts, and I come back every couple years to Milwaukee to perform, and I'm so happy that I got to come to Madison this time.
As are we.
Thank you.
Now, you have a CD or two out, right?
Yeah, I do, actually. I'll be selling them after my concert tomorrow in Milwaukee, so in case people are there, please come backstage.
If you have the hunger, what's on those CDs?
Let me try and remember. I think there's some Beethoven, Liszt, Scriabin, and Prokofiev.
Oh, that's a good combination of things. And where do you go from here?
This is actually the last week of my three-week concert tour in the U.S. I had a total of 7 concerts, so this was my 6th. And I go back to Berlin after this, and then I have a performance in Hong Kong at the end of,
but of course,
June, and I'm playing in South Africa and around Europe and Asia later this year, so it's going to be lots of traveling and lots of fun.
Yeah, you have that South African connection, right?
Yes, my family used to live in South Africa, and I've been going to perform with the different orchestras there almost every single year, so it's such a pleasure.
Well, it sounds like you're not going to be sitting still very much.
No, I don't think so.
Maybe we'll be able to capture you again the next time you come flying by our general vicinity.
I would love that. Thanks for having me.